Welcome back to the deep dive. You know the mission here. We take that that whole stack of dense sources.
The white papers, the articles, all of it.
Exactly. And we distill it all down into what you actually need to know to be well informed. And today we are jumping headfirst into the architecture and, well, the economic engine of Avalanche.
Or, as most people probably know it by its ticker, AVAX.
Right, AVAX.
And it's such a fascinating case study in, you know, blockchain evolution.
What?
It didn't just try to do what came before, but a little bit better. It really tried to re-engineer the whole process of consensus.
And the sources position it as this high-speed open source platform, not just for dApps, which we hear about all the time, but for something else.
For enterprise,
mm-hmm.
For institutional deployment. That's the key distinction.
And there's this one phrase, I mean, it's in almost every source we looked at that just keeps coming up. It's sub-second finality.
Sub-second finality. It's their core technical promise.
And this isn't just about being fast, is it? We're talking about confirmation that feels, to a user, basically instantaneous.
It's an absolutely essential distinction. I mean, if you look at some of the older chains, finality can take minutes, sometimes longer. Developers literally have to build workarounds for that lag.
Yeah.
Avalanche's goal was just to, you know, eliminate it completely.
So our goal for this deep dive is pretty clear. We want to pull out those compelling technical advantages that attract developers and big finance.
And then immediately weigh them against the risks.
Exactly. Balance it out with the competitive pressures, the risks that are kind of baked into its design so that you, the listener, can walk away with a really holistic view. Okay, let's unpack this. Let's start with that technical superiority. How do they actually get that speed? And, you know, why does it matter beyond just being able to say you're the fastest?
Well, the speed really comes from a pretty unique technical innovation. You know, when we talk performance, there are two big metrics. Throughput, so transactions per second, and then finality.
Finality being the guarantee that a transaction can't be reversed.
Exactly. And Avalanche excels because of its totally novel consensus protocol,
mm-hmm.
which is also named Avalanche.
I've heard people compare the older systems, like proof of work, to like a big committee meeting where everyone has to agree one by one. How is this different?
That's a great analogy, actually. Avalanche doesn't do that. It doesn't use that sequential block-by-block validation.
Yeah.
Instead, it uses a mechanism of randomized, repeated subsampling.
Okay, that sounds complex.
It sounds, but think of it less like a committee meeting and more like a rumor spreading virally through a network. A node asks a small, random group of other nodes, hey, do you agree with this transaction?
Mm.
If it gets a strong yes from that small group, say 80% agree, it accepts it. And then that consensus just cascades. It spreads across a whole network with incredible speed.
So it's not waiting for this long deterministic confirmation. It's reaching a probabilistic finality, but super, super quickly.
Precisely. And that architecture, plus what the sources call the family of protocols, like Avalanche and Snowman, which handles the chains, that's what gets them transaction finality in, you know, consistently less than 1 second.
And for something like a decentralized exchange or finance, that speed is non-negotiable.
Absolutely. You can't have lag when millions of dollars are moving.
Okay. And that speed, it has a direct knock-on effect on cost, right? That's the other big advantage our sources highlight. It's not just low fees, but predictable ones.
The predictability is, I would argue, the bigger draw for anyone building on the platform.
Right. Because if you've ever used a congested layer one, you know that feeling. The gas fees can just spike from, what, pennies to $50 in minutes?
And it just prices out regular users. It makes so many applications commercially unviable. Avalanche's design just drastically mitigates those crazy spikes. It keeps costs low and crucially reliable.
Which makes real commerce possible. It shifts the whole thing from being this a luxury good for huge transfers to a utility you can use every day.
Yeah, it creates a real incentive for developers.
Yeah.
They can build consumer apps where the user isn't going to get, you know, blindsided by a $100 fee just to mint an NFT or something.
That technical foundation is impressive for sure. But speed alone has never really been enough to win these Layer 1 wars, has it?
No, not at all.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Let's talk about the ecosystem and specifically this one feature that seems tailor-made for institutional money, subnets.
Subnets are, I think, the defining feature of Avalanche. Most people think of a blockchain as this one big public road that everyone has to share.
Mm-hmm.
Avalanche breaks that model. It lets you create these customized application-specific blockchains, the subnets, that run alongside the main network.
So if I'm a big institution, let's say a huge asset manager, why do I care? Why do I want a subnet instead of just using the public chain?
Because it solves your biggest headache regulation, and governance.
Ah.
Think of the main network like a massive, secure cruise ship. It's powerful, safe, anyone can get on board, and the rules are the same for everybody. A subnet is like a private yacht you tie to the side of that cruise ship.
Okay, I like this analogy.
It gets its power and its security from the main ship, but on your yacht, you set the rules. You decide who comes on board, how fast you go, what the internal rules are.
Meaning I can create a permissioned environment.
Exactly. An institution can say, only these 5 KYC-verified firms can validate our transactions. They can customize their virtual machine. They can set their own gas fees. They can even decide which token is used for gas. It's complete control, but with the security and speed of the main network.
And that is what makes real regulated institutional adoption actually feasible.
That's the whole pitch.
That is powerful. But you still have the chicken and egg problem, right? You need developers to come build on this thing in the first place.
You do. And that brings us to the second big ecosystem accelerator, Ethereum compatibility. The main chain on Avalanche, the C chain, is fully compatible with the Ethereum virtual machine.
The EVM, the universal translator of the blockchain world.
That's a perfect way to put it. It means developers who have built their entire careers on Ethereum don't have to learn a new language or build new tools from scratch.
They can just port everything over.
They can migrate their existing smart contracts, use familiar wallets like MetaMask, and immediately start using the high speed and low fees. It's like giving them a pre-built developer community on day one.
And finally, on the architecture side, let's talk economics. We said the fees are low, but where they go is just as important. There's this deflationary mechanism.
This is a really powerful feedback loop. On some chains, transaction fees go to validators as a reward. On Avalanche, all transaction fees are burned.
Burned meaning destroyed forever.
Gone forever. So as more people use the network and transactions increase, more AVAX is permanently removed from circulation. It creates this deflationary pressure.
So the network is basically designed to become more scarce the more useful it becomes. It directly links utility to the token's economics.
That's the theory, yeah. If those subnets really take off and attract massive enterprise volume, we're talking millions of transactions a day, that burn rate could become very, very aggressive.
Which would, in theory, support the long-term value. But there's a potential conflict here, isn't there?
What are you thinking?
Well, if all the transaction fees are being burned, what stops the validators from just jacking up the minimum gas price to, you know, maximize their own staking rewards? Doesn't that kill the whole predictable low fees advantage?
That's a great question. And it's a dynamic tension that's just inherent in the model.
Okay.
Validators do earn staking rewards, but the platform governance, which requires them to stake a lot of AVX, relies on the network staying competitive. If fees become too expensive, developers and users leave.
And the value of the network drops.
And the value of the validator's own stake plummets. So there's this balance. The burn creates scarcity, but the competitive need to keep fees low for adoption kind of keeps everyone in check.
So we've got a fast engine, a unique architecture for enterprise, and tokenomics designed for scarcity. But, you know, no deep dive is complete without looking at the other side of the coin, the risks.
Right. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this is not a friendly market. We are talking about a hyper-competitive space.
Avalanche doesn't exist in a vacuum.
Not at all. It has to constantly fight for its place. And the sources are really clear on this. They're competing for developers, for liquidity, for users, for everything. And they're up against giants.
Let's name them.
Well, you have Ethereum, the incumbent, which is solving its own scaling issues with layer twos and has massive network effects. You have other speed demons like Solana with a totally different architectural approach.
And what about things that compete directly with subnets?
That's another threat. You have modular solutions like Polygon that are also offering enterprises their own custom sovereign chains. So the innovation has to be relentless just to stay in the race.
Okay, so that's the external market pressure. What about internal risks? The sources mentioned token distribution.
Yeah, this is more of a supply pressure perception risk. Mm. The big initial allocations to the foundation, to early investors, to the team, and most of that vesting is done. But the sheer size of those early allocations can still create some worry in the market.
So it's not a technical flaw, but more of a market sentiment thing, an overhang.
Precisely. It's part of the token's origin story. And when the market turns down, the perception that there are these large concentrated wallets out there can, you know, add to the selling pressure.
Okay, now let's go back to the crown jewel. Subnets. We talked about the benefits of that customization. What's the fundamental risk that comes with it?
The risk is a nuance of decentralization and security. Remember the cruise ship analogy?
Yeah, the yacht tied to the side.
The subnet, the yacht, inherits the security and finality of the main network, the cruise ship. But each individual subnet has to be secured by its own separate group of validators.
So if our institutional bank only wants, say, 5 trusted, regulated firms to validate its transactions, what does that do?
It creates a potential point of failure at the application layer. That specific subnet is now far less decentralized than the main network it's running on. If those 5 validators get compromised or collude,
then that specific enterprise application is vulnerable, even if the main Avalanche chain is running perfectly fine.
Exactly. The very customizability that attracts enterprises also puts the responsibility on them to manage their own security and decentralization properly.
That's a huge insight. The success of a dApp on Avalanche depends on its own ability to properly decentralize its little mini network.
Absolutely. And the final big concern the source has flagged is its dependency on ecosystem hype, on volatility.
What do you mean by that?
AVX has benefited massively from certain market cycles, especially the boom in GameFi decentralized gaming and those super high-yield DeFi protocols.
Right, and we should probably clarify total value locked, or TVL, here.
Yeah, TVL is just the total dollar value of all the assets locked up in a platform's DeFi ecosystem. It's a rough gauge of network health. A lot of AVX's TVL was driven by that GameFi hype.
So if that specific sector cools off, say there's a crypto winter or regulators crack down on crypto gaming,
that TVL can fall off a cliff. And when it does, the perception of network activity follows. And that can lead to some pretty substantial price volatility for the token itself.
And of course, there's the big one, the overarching risk.
You always have to mention it. AVX, like every other major altcoin, is still highly, highly correlated with Bitcoin and the macro crypto market. Technical superiority doesn't make you immune to a bear market.
So what does this all mean? We've gone through the tech, the unique enterprise angle, and then balanced it with some very real, very competitive risks.
It means Avalanche is really a fascinating study in trade-offs. On one hand, you have this genuine technical edge, the speed, the finality, and this powerful, regulatory-friendly subnet design.
But on the other hand,
you have this relentless competition from other layer ones and this structural complexity where its best feature customization also introduces a potential decentralization risk if it's not managed carefully.
Our mission was to distill all this for you, the listener, and I think we've painted the full picture. You see why developers love the EVM compatibility and the deflationary burn.
But you also see exactly where the market anxiety comes from, whether it's competition or the security nuances of subnets.
So to leave you with one final thought,
let's bring it back to that scarcity mechanism, the burn. The whole long-term value proposition really hinges on one big idea, that big enterprises and institutions will migrate their massive transaction volumes onto subnets.
Driving usage through the roof.
Which in turn fuels the AVX burn, creating that sustainable scarcity. So here's the open question to ponder. If those big banks and asset managers don't end up migrating the massive way that's hoped for, is raw speed and a token burn enough to win this layer one race? Or does the network just become a Ferrari stuck in second gear?
Something to mull over until our next deep dive. Thanks for tuning in.